Hi, this is Mike Chambers, and this is my podcast for July 14th, 2006. Just a quick reminder that everything in this podcast is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share Alike 2.5 license. So today's podcast is going to be pretty short, but we actually have a little treat, or I actually have a little treat for you today. A little later on, we'll have a couple of the engineers from the Apollo team come in and talk about Apollo, as a runtime, some concerns around that. But before that, just really quickly go over a couple of quick things. So as you probably know, if you listen to my podcast, you probably read my weblog and watch MXNA, and you've seen more and more discussion going on about Apollo online in the developer community. It originally started out with press covering it. There was a press tour a couple months ago. We were talking about Apollo and the engagement platform a little. So there's a couple articles about Apollo, and you know, we've been discussing it more and more online. Luis Polanco gave a online presentation a couple weeks ago talking about Apollo. So there's lots of information out there about Apollo, but there's not really a central place to find that information, or, you know, there's not a place at Adobe's site or on labs to get that information. So a lot of people have been bringing this up, asking about, you know, where can I find information about Apollo? Why isn't it on labs? And I've been working on this. It's taken a lot longer, trying to convince people that we need like a central place for this information. But regardless, Ryan Stewart this week kind of took matters into his own hands and realizing that labs.adobe.com has a wiki, and realizing what wikis are for, he took it upon himself to create an Apollo section on labs and linked out to a lot of the information that's out there. So this is actually really cool. You know, it shows like, one, it shows the power of wikis. Like, there's a need for information out there, and we were too slow to respond to that, to provide a central place for that information. But it's a great resource. If you just go to labs.adobe.com, go to the wiki, search for Apollo. Ryan's added some stuff linking out. I'll probably update it with some more information, in the coming days and weeks as we release some more information and more discussion goes on. But it looks like this may finally be a place, thanks to Ryan, a central place for getting information about Apollo, or at least linking out to official information. The other thing I want to talk about is really quickly is, about a week and a half ago, I made a post asking people for their input on what questions they would want to see in Apollo FAQ. Been working on it, planning to work on an FAQ for a while, public FAQ. And, I had a working draft, but I figured I'd ask people what they want to know just to make sure that I address the questions that everyone's interested in. So I got a ton of responses. I'm not sure how many comments there are on there, probably about 40 or 50, let's see. Okay, so about 40 comments on there. I went through all of these, wrote down all the questions. I had a lot of questions from that had been sent to the Wish Apollo list. There were a lot of questions. There's about 40 questions, and it's taken me most of the week to put together the FAQ, so that's going to be done pretty soon. Matter of fact, it's probably going to be live by the time this podcast is released. It's Friday now. I may release this on Monday. But anyways, the FAQ should be out on Monday. And I'll link it from the lab site. But it should cover most of the questions everyone's been asking. There's some of the questions specifically around, security, that we don't have all the answers. Like, we're actually spending a lot of time right now trying to figure out what the exact security model and mechanisms for Apollo applications will be. A lot of people have been asking about that. It's a really important issue. So I would spend a lot of time on it. So we don't really have an answer for that question right now. But, you know, as we kind of work through some of these things and figure out more details, then I'll just update the FAQ over time. So I kind of see this as kind of a living document. I'm going to update it as new information comes out, or as people want new information, and, you know, this will be around a long time. So Just a second, we'll do an interview with a couple of engineers from the Apollo team. But before that starts, I just want to point out that everything that's discussed in this interview, and actually everything I talk about Apollo, you know, it's all subject to change. We're really early in the development process. We're nowhere near feature complete. We're still designing features, and you know, we're not releasing Apollo till 2007. So, you know, everything we talk about is all subject to change, and so that's just something to keep in mind. You know, as we talk about features, talk about what we're planning to do, everything's subject to change. Cool. So today, you know, last week, I pulled up my podcast again, started doing my podcast again, and I promised that I'd do it regularly. I actually promised one for this Thursday, so it probably won't be out today, but I'm recording it on Thursday, so that counts for something. But I'd mentioned that we're going to have a couple people from the Apollo team in here and talk about Apollo as a runtime is actually what I want to talk about. So we have Oliver and Ethan here. I'll let you guys introduce yourselves. Oliver.
Hi, I'm Oliver. I'm one of the engineers on the Apollo engineering team, and I'm working these days mostly around issues with deploying the runtime and deploying applications and some enterprise features.
Cool. And what did you work on before? What team did you work on before Apollo?
Before Apollo, I worked for many years on Adobe's Lifecycle product line. In fact, I worked on it from before it was called Lifecycle.
What it used to be called?
It started off as the Adobe Graphics Server. That was the first product. And then there was the Adobe Document Server. And then we gained some other things through some acquisitions and decided that it all ought to have one name. And so Lifecycle was the name they eventually chose for all of that.
Cool. Yeah. Ethan?
Hi, I'm Ethan. I'm also an engineer on the Apollo team. I've been focusing recently on a whole lot of security stuff, which, as you can imagine, ties into a bunch of different aspects. And I worked on Central, and I worked on the Flash Player, also focusing on security for the past couple of years.
Yeah. So a couple of weeks ago, Luis Blanco, a product manager for Apollo, actually gave a presentation online during the Adobe Developer Week. And it generated, you know, there were a lot of screenshots that went on the blogs after that, a lot of discussion about what was discussed. And one of the things that came up consistently in the comments about that were concerns about Apollo being a runtime. And so I wanted to talk about that, you know, talk about what that actually means, first of all, and then what are we doing? Like, are we doing anything to address some of those concerns? And how can we make that, the process of installing application, installing a runtime better? So, so Oliver, why don't you just, can you really quickly just give a description of, like, what is Apollo is a runtime? What does that mean?
Sure. So, runtime, I mean, I think a lot of people are familiar with the term. In fact, I think it goes back to the C runtime, right? So back in the good old days when everybody was just writing C code on Unix, right? You write some stuff in C and you call printf or something like that, and that printf implementation was actually in the C runtime library, right? And that just meant that there was some code and implementation that you could depend on that was going to be on the machine you were running on at the time that your program ran. And in fact, the C runtime is so transparent that most of us don't even think about it, even though almost every application on your machine today depends on it in one way or another. Runtimes have gotten sort of fancier and bigger and more complicated with things like Java and .NET, but in the end, they're still basically the same thing. It's a library of code providing functionality that you expect to be on the machine that you're targeting. I think, you know, when you look at Apollo, there's a couple of reasons we want to do it as a runtime. I mean, one is that we need some way of providing all of this functionality that makes up Apollo itself. Right. But the other is that by getting the runtime on people's machines beforehand, we're also going to be able to enable a cross-platform deployment mechanism. Mm-hmm. And that's something that we're really striving for. So imagine a facility where you could sort of package up your application into a single file. We're calling them the air files at the right. moment. I'm sure that'll get changed when the branding guys get a hold of it.
I think it's pretty cool. We should keep it.
I think it's a great name, but it's an engineering name. And, you know, this file is something that that's pretty small and that you can send to any machine, Windows, Mac, or Linux, or even mobile devices eventually, and it'll just install on that machine, right? And you don't have to know what kind of machine you're downloading it for beforehand. And we can't do that unless we can get the runtime onto people's machines beforehand.
So what? Well, let's dive right into it then. Let's say I'm a developer. I just created my Apollo application and wrapped it up as an .air file, and I put it up on my website. What happens if someone downloads that and they don't have Apollo? What's going to happen? What's the experience?
Yeah. Well, if they really just did that, then that .air file is just going to sit there on their machine, and honestly, they're not going to probably know what to do with it.
Right.
So what we're going to do is work really hard to make sure that nobody ever gets into that situation.
Right.
And there's a whole bunch of things we're going to be able to do around that. The first thing is that we're going to try really hard to get the runtime onto everybody's machine to begin with. Right.
That's something we have a lot of experience with, Flash Player and Acrobat Reader.
Yeah, right. I mean, we have Flash on like 98% of the machines or something, and Reader's on over 80%. So most machines actually already run two pieces of software from Adobe at least. And so that'll be the first thing that we'll try. Now, the other thing we're going to do is we're going to leverage the ubiquity of Flash in the browser so that your download page can actually prompt people if they need to get the runtime.
Right.
So hopefully you don't leave people hanging, like, download this .air file and they have no idea what to do with it.
Right. So this is something similar to Central, like what we did at Central?
So this is a technique that's been used by Central and by Breeze as well, which is basically leveraging some capability in the Flash player to detect whether certain applications are installed. And this means that by creating a good, web-based landing page for to initiate the install of your Apollo app, you can both detect ahead of time that the runtime prerequisites are installed and also begin that download process and actually just make it happen pretty much invisibly.
So, and like you mentioned, this is something that Central did. And I actually think it's one of the things that Central did really well. We got a lot of good feedback, and it got a good reaction from developers. Like, one of the things developers liked the most about it was, they have an application, and they don't really have to worry about whether the Central runtime is installed in that sense, because the player can handle that and prompt the user to install everything.
Exactly.
So is this something we're thinking about doing for Apollo applications, also enabling that same type of install mechanism?
Definitely.
Okay.
I mean, it's pretty much essential that you can just imagine that even assuming best case scenario that we get on like every machine in the world,
right,
that there's going to be some lead-in time, and the people who are probably most excited about Apollo development are going to be on that bleeding edge,
right?
And are still going to have to deal with getting the runtime to users,
right? So that works really well for web-based deployment.
Mm-hmm.
But what if my .air file's on download.com, or I want to distribute my app on download.com, or I want to email it or put it on a CD-ROM or something? Like, what do we do there? Are we doing anything to address those types of situations?
So I think one of the things there, Mike, is that there's a whole alternate deployment path that we're also going to support, not only for the cases that you mentioned, but also for the enterprise cases, right? So one of the things we're trying to enable is, writing Apollo applications for the enterprise and then making it easy for administrators to deploy that application to maybe 100,000 machines or something like that, right? And those machines may not have the runtime yet either, and so you can imagine that that's a big problem to overcome. So we're planning on providing a free tool that will allow you to convert your .air file into a native installation package, like an MSI on Windows, for example.
Right.
And when you do that, bundle a copy of the runtime with it so that the resulting thing, now it's platform specific, right? But it's something that you can just deploy as a single unit and will include the runtime itself. And that completely eliminates any need to get the runtime onto the machine beforehand.
Right.
Because that MSI file or whatever, or just that application on the Mac, is understood by the machine already.
Right.
There's no prerequisite that's required.
Right.
And I'd add to that although Oliver was describing it for the enterprise, it also has a lot of applications outside the enterprise, especially for the early adopters. This would work in more consumer-focused cases, if you wanted to put something on a CD-ROM or something like that, or distribute something on little flash drives or just a shared file server, and essentially you then make the necessary trade-off, right? You lose the single cross-platform deployment bundle, but you gain the single file that has no prerequisites and contains everything it needs, and also sort of has the upside for the larger Apollo community, in that it can help the early adopters who use that can help distribute the Apollo runtime itself so that later apps then can just distribute the cross-platform bundle.
Right, right. So it's kind of like this virtuous cycle. Yeah. The more people building apps, helping distribute the runtime, the more people have the runtime, the easier it is to deploy apps.
I think a couple other minor but still important points around that are that we're watching the size of the runtime very carefully, both for the you download it separately case, and if you were to bundle it with one of these MSI files, you'd want it to be smaller. And also that we're going to allow redistribution of the runtime in this way, right? That'll be okay. The tool will bundle it, and the thing that's the file that pops out of that includes a copy of the runtime, and you'll be free to distribute that.
Right. So just to make sure I understand, and make sure that everyone listening understands. So basically, if you're a developer building Apollo applications, you'll have two primary ways to distribute your installer file, and then maybe a couple of others, more seamless ways. So you'll be able to create a kind of a cross-platform air file that Apollo, if the Apollo runtime's already installed, it can recognize it and then install onto the user system. But the developers also have the option to create a Mac or Windows or whichever platforms we're targeting, the native installers that can detect whether Apollo is installed. And if it's not, first install the runtime and then install the application. Did I summarize that?
That's it. So.
Yep. That's right.
Cool. So I think that will go a long way to really address a lot of the concerns that came up over the past couple of weeks where people were really concerned about the runtime. It's kind of a chicken and egg thing. And they're concerned, about deploying to a platform that doesn't have a lot of distribution, especially for, a 1.0 product.
Yeah, I hope it does address that. There is one other concern that I've heard about that we've also thought about a little, which is this fear that people have based on experience that sort of depending on some runtime on the system or anything on the system leads to the situation of DLL hell.
Right.
Where, things change underneath you. And this we believe is not just innate to having a separate runtime, right? And can be solved. And so for Apollo, we've put some effort into focusing on the way that applications can bind to a specific version of the runtime, so that even when newer versions of the runtime come out, you don't have to risk the stability of your already installed, already deployed applications.
Right. So you could have multiple versions of Apollo installed.
We're actually trying to be careful with the terminology here. Trying to avoid the multiple versions installed situation. Right. Like, that's what Java got into, and you have to have different versions of the JRE, and apps were very dependent on which version, and it became really messy really quickly.
Right.
Let's not do that, okay. Good idea. We're only going to have one version of Apollo installed, but that one instance of Apollo is going to have different versions of the libraries themselves.
Okay.
Right? And we're basically never going to throw any of these libraries away. Okay. And your app is going to specify which version of the library it needs. So as long as Apollo is there, you're going to get the version that you want, and you don't have to worry that new versions are going to come out and break your stuff, because we're going to keep the old version around for you.
Right.
And we're only going to patch those old versions for things like security fixes that you would want.
Right. Right?
No gratuitous changes that might break things. So, I mean, to Ethan's point, the versioning problem is real, and we really do have to address it. That's what gets you into the DLL hell situation. But it can be addressed if you just treat it up front and build a system that's aware of versioning and addresses it explicitly from the beginning. And that's what we're trying to build.
All right. Cool. Sounds really cool. So thanks for coming into my temporary sound studio here.
It's really fancy.
Yeah, I got kicked out of my old sound studio. I sold Ed's office, my boss's office, so I'm in Kevin Lynch's lounge right now. I'll probably be somewhere next week. So anyways, we'll probably have you guys on again a lot more over the next year or so. Ethan, you have a weblog up. You're going to start posting to it?
I sure am.
Okay. Oliver?
Can't wait.
I'm going to have to get my blog started, I can tell.
Cool. Well, thanks a lot, guys.
All right.
Thanks.
So, once again, just a quick reminder that everything on this podcast was released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share Alike 2.5 license. All the links that I discussed in the podcast today, I'll post on my weblog, which is at weblogs.macromedia.com/mesh. And I'll talk to you again next week. Thanks.